Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Welcome back to another edition of Zero Block 30. Once again, I am Uncle Chaps. We have Kate, we have Cons, we have young Bren in the house, and we also have five rounds in the magazine. Round number one, the St. Louis Blues color guard, they made an unreal mistake. I love it so much. It's one of those stories that's so bad that it's delicious. I want to spread it out on some nice wheat toast, add a little bit of lettuce, and consume it every day for the rest of my life. Round number two, should President Trump declare war on England? I think I would if I were him. Round number three, I want to dunk my nuts on the VA. I am so sick of their weed-related shit. The VA denies a Massachusetts veteran a home loan over his legal, you heard that right, legal marijuana job. Round number four, after the drama of the last few weeks, we decided to keep the interview light. We brought in some folks to talk about their anti-poaching efforts in Africa. And finally, round five, older folks on base, and especially at medical stunt with their veteran hats on. At what age is it not cringeworthy to wear the traditional veteran hat of whatever war you are in? That's all we're going to talk about today, and it's all going to be brought to you by our friends at Dollar Shave Club. If you want to get compliments like I am getting on the regular now, because let me tell you how their little cologne bottles come in. They have a set of six that comes in whenever you get one of their starter sets. Whenever you get that bad boy, immediately go to blueprint number 202. That's the smell that everybody is basically, I'll say it, jizzing themselves over. Like, people have been loving this smell. Get the cologne set, the starter set when you get it. You can get it for just $5 whenever you use the promo code ZBT. I'm not kidding. Every single person who gives me a hug whenever I'm wearing this says that I smell fantastic. And right now you can get it at Dollar Shave Club starter set for $5. It comes with everything that you'll need, the executive razor, shave butter, face cleanser, and you're going to get this good old-fashioned smell good cologne. Get your starter set for $5 again by using the promo code or slash. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. That's dollarshaveclub.com/chaps. Engulfed in a little bit of the French say drama over the last.
Yeah, the mud, the proverbial mud that is so often cast upon parcels.
I don't even know if I would classify it as mud because we didn't fire back. We're not like going out there and calling people idiots or douches or anything like that because they disagree with us. The people who disagree with us, by and large, didn't listen. So
yeah, that was the best part. And let me tell you all the things wrong with this show and this interview. Hey, wait, did you listen? No, of course not. But I already know what my opinion is. Okay, thanks.
And I've long said that if you don't listen, fuck you. I've always said
yeah,
the moment that you listen to the podcast, you're our friend. But if you don't, fuck off and fuck off forever.
If you're listening to this right now, if you're sitting here listening to Zero Block 30, and you're looking around, you're on the subway or you're out in public and you see other people who are not listening, fuck them. That's who we're saying fuck you to. I mean, goodness gracious.
Goodness gracious alive. But thanks to everybody who supported us, had our back on social media and said, listen, actually give it a listen. We're talking about the episode that we did with Duncan Hunter. If you haven't heard that, you might want to because it's making a little waves. But that's not what we're going to focus on today. We're moving past it. It's in our rearview mirror. We're on to episode, what is this, 173?
Wrong.
Friends?
Something like that.
I believe it is,
yeah, 173.
Wrong.
We're on to episode 173 wrong. Now. And we've got a packed episode today, but we want to start off. Catherine, how was your trip down to Texas?
It was fabulous. It was wonderful. It was my birthday weekend.
Your actual birthday?
Today. Happy birthday.
It's today.
Oh,
today,
happy birthday.
Recording. Yes. Woo! So I said something online and people thought it was my birthday this weekend. So then everyone started wishing me a happy birthday and I felt like it was too much to explain that it wasn't my birthday till Monday. So I was just like, thanks everyone. So then I get to have two birthdays because I'm doing it again today. So it was great. I went to Port Aransas, Texas. It was my first time on the Texas Gulf Coast. I got stung by a jellyfish. It's more of like a blue collar beach town. And we went to one of the bars one night and I was like, why are all these like holes in the floor that were covered up with wood? They're like, oh, whenever a hurricane rolls through, we just punch a big old hole in the floor so the bar don't float away.
And I'm like, raccoons get up on the back porch, mama just sweep them off with a broom.
Oh yeah.
Coons. Coons.
It was just, yeah, it was fun. I went pool hopping. I got kicked out of a swimming pool that wasn't mine. So I'm easing into my birthday. I'm easing into my 30s by being a mature, responsible adult.
And I want to give Kate an official staff and CO shout out. Well done on OPSEC, Devil Dog, because I just went to your Twitter profile again. No birthday balloons popped up. You have a fake birthday entered.
I do have a fake birthday entered. I like to keep it on the DL. And I like to tell people, women like to say that they're younger than they are. I'm telling people I'm turning 45 this year. So that when they look at me, they're like,
fantastic.
Right. You look fucking amazing for 45. So I'm keeping it a mystery, but I'm just for know that I'm 45.
What's your secret? Horseradish.
Good job. Good job.
Marlboros. Marlboro Lights.
All right. Let's hop into the show. Round number one.
Well, how was your weekend, chaps?
I just said we're hopping into the show.
I don't want to hop in yet. I want to hear about your weekend.
No, because then I know that's going to be you talking about your weekend. If you want to mention something, you can use one of your rounds.
There was nothing of any note for me to mention. I was just curious.
No, my weekend was fine. It was good. Let's move on.
I feel like this is like Khan's laying on a bed, on a twin bed in high school, like twirling the phone cord between his fingers, like, so, Dish, how was your weekend?
What's the tea? All right, let's start because we only had four rounds, but then this one came up, and I am so excited about this. There is a UniWatch, which is a Twitter account dedicated to just finding out different types of uniforms, who's going to be updating their uniforms. Khan's follows them because he wants to know firsthand what the Army uniform is going to look like, any kind of change that they might have. So if there's a uniform in pro or college that's going to be updating, UniWatch is who you go to see, like what's going on. They usually get the first leaks. Well, they got bigly triggered over something that happened in St. Louis at the Stanley Cup. UniWatch said, shame on the St. Louis Blues and at Enterprise for putting an advertising flag as part of the color guard accompanying the national anthem prior to last night's Stanley Cup game. A nauseating spectacle. We need to push back against this type of encroachment. Hat tit DD Appis or something like that. Let me start by saying I'm not a fan of including brands into the color guard.
Well, can you describe the scene? Somebody describe the picture real quick.
All right. So let me first describe what an actual color guard does. So a color guard will be a group of five or six. Usually it's only four that I know of. Like, no, five. You'll have each one of the branches of service, except for the Coast Guard, because they're in the Department of Homeland Security. Sometimes they're not a part of it. If you want to include them, there's six flags. There's the United States flag. There'll be the Army, Marine Corps, Air Force, Navy, and Coast Guard flags. Sometimes states will have like the state flag will be thrown in, but never, like in this picture, you see a dude named Charles Glenn getting ready to sing the national anthem. There's people behind him. They look like first responders. They look like either firemen. They look like
police officers.
Yeah, police officer or fireman. Mm-hmm. One of them is holding a St. Louis Blues flag, like in the actual color guard with the official color guard. And then the other one, and this is the best part, because I could see, like, maybe see where you thought it might be a good idea to add the St. Louis Blues because you're at their stadium. Mm-hmm. The next one is Enterprise Rental Car. Yeah. I mean, you just can't.
Yeah, well, I mean, so we got some information from Kyle, our social guy, who said Enterprise is St. Louis-based and a huge employer there, and the Blues play, obviously, in the Enterprise Center. So the joke is that St. Louis is when you graduate from Mizzou, you just go right to work at Enterprise. So it's a very prominent business that obviously employs a lot of their citizens. But to then have that flag represented in the color guard is maybe a step too far.
I wish that it was – I wish then that the main employer in that town was like Busch Light. So it was like, or like some ridiculous brand that was
like San Antonio's Kielbasa sausage.
Yeah, like America, the wiener flag. Yeah.
So there's got to be a pecking order though too, because obviously, you know, my guess is that the ranking individual gets to carry the American flag as the most prestigious of the flags. So imagine if you're the guy who has to carry the Enterprise flag and what's going through your mind when you get told like, hey, by the way, you're carrying the Enterprise flag for the
national. I think you hold that motherfucker high to the sky. When they say first note and last note, you give it a little rip of a salute yourself. I just don't know how this gets okay. There's so many different layers. This is so bad that I'm not even remotely offended by it.
Right, right.
I'm just, if I was sitting in the stands, I'd be like, is that a goddamn Enterprise flag? And the official color guard? Ridiculous. It's simply ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's our guy, so funny too, because the singer like looks so serious and everyone looks so serious, and then two, if you don't see the little Enterprise symbol on the flag, is kind of, it's a small green square, it looks like the white flag, it looks like surrender.
Yeah. Let me make something very, very clear, okay? Because we'll probably have some people listening very intently to this episode. By no means are we trying to disgrace the national anthem or our flag. I think it is a time-honored tradition before sporting events.
No, fuck that. You don't have to say that shit. Anybody who gets butthurt about it is fucking
boo. Boo, cons. We're not going to fucking pussyfoot around issues. This is wonderful. And for anybody to say that it's not wonderful is a fucking idiot. If you're not flying the Interplast flag everywhere, I might go buy one and hang it up in my office. Just a stunt on the hate.
By the way, for whatever reason, saying Enterprise flag is a little weird because I messed it up and you just fumbled over it a little bit too.
Enterprise flag. Yeah.
It's weird. But anyway, yeah, this is kind of just very silly that it would go through multiple layers.
They also had it. And then this wasn't the only thing that they had. I love this idea, first of all, because you got to get money where you can get it. As somebody who reads a shit ton of ads every single week, I understand this. I love the fact that they're bringing advertisement in. This next national anthem is brought to you by our good friends at Dollar Shave Club.
I'm going to say this is the most American thing that could possibly happen.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point.
It's capitalism, baby. Like, and whenever they're doing this, when they had the national anthem, not even pictured here, whenever they had the national anthem going on the Jumbotron, you know how they'll have like a fake flag flowing on the Jumbotron? Yeah. Yeah. Well, this one was – it was like the blue background, white stars, and then in the middle it just said Boeing.
Yeah, but you're right. That's American capitalism, excuse me, at its finest. And I didn't listen to this national anthem, but it would only have been made better if at the end of the national anthem.
So Cons wants to critique people at the top of their show for not –
No, I was going to say
– That's the same thing.
You didn't let me finish. No, it's really terrible because this was going to be an okay joke at best, and now it's just going to land flat. So I'm just not.
I have a feeling that's not the first time you didn't let me finish. Was that? All right, let's move on to round number two.
All right, sweep out your chimneys, governors. And we're moving on to Great Britain for round number two. Bye. That's my best British impression.
No, that was fantastic. Yeah,
okay, it sounded like what's his face from Mary Poppins?
Who is Harry? Hermione? Buckbeak? No, all right.
Chim chiminy chim chim chiru.
In Britain, a state visit doesn't just mean dining with the Prime Minister or even tea with the Queen. It means an extraordinary level of pomp and pageantry, plus a sleepover at Buckingham Palace. At least normally it does. Britain's gearing up for this week's state visit by President Trump, as only Britain can do. There's going to be an official greeting ceremony at the palace, lavish banquets with the Queen's best china, a gun salute fired from the park and the Tower of London, and it's going to be over the top as per usual. But there's also a sense that British officials are slightly less enthusiastic about this particular round of state visit grandeur. Some in the traditional trappings, such as staying over at Buckingham Palace, the royal welcome of the House Guards, gold carriage procession down the mall, are notably absent. Buckingham Palace is reportedly unable to host the Trumps because of ongoing renovation work that began in 2016. According to the official royal website, the palace has 775 rooms, including 52 royal guest bedrooms. Trump is known to hold the Queen in high regard. He once told the Times of London that his Scottish-born mother loved the Queen. She loved the ceremonial and the beauty because nobody does it like the English, and she had great respect for the Queen. So basically I don't know what this is saying.
Basically it's saying that everything that they would normally do for a visiting dignitary, they're not doing for him. And they claim it's because of renovations when that seems a little shocking.
When there's a whole buttload of rooms open.
You have 52 rooms available and not a single one can be used.
Is open.
Yeah, because you would think if the President of the United States is coming over and you invited him on an official state visit, that essentially you'd have like Clocksworth and what's the fucking name of the candle on?
Yeah. LeFleur? Is it LeFleur or LeFleur or something like that? I can't remember.
Lumiere,
yeah. There you go. So you would think that they would be standing there at the Buckingham Palace. I realize that that's a French reference, you idiots. I realize it. But you'd still imagine they'd be like, guess. Like you would just hate to have go to Buckingham Palace and not get the official to get to stay there. You would just think that's automatic. I'd be pissed, man.
Here's the other thing.
I would be legitimately upset that I didn't get to stay in Buckingham Palace.
The other thing that I think is important to note is that it's not like, you know, last Friday he gives her a call and say, hey, Lizzie, I'm thinking about coming next week. What do you think? This was known many, many months in advance that this trip was planned. So the fact that they couldn't get one of those rooms ready is very telling of what I think the Queen thinks of President Trump.
But for all we know, President Trump was like, hey, there's a Trump hotel in town. I'm going to do that.
Go play golf here. He's going to go to this golf course.
So, who knows? But that is funny, the idea of having such a huge, huge place and being like, ooh, you know what? We're getting one of the bathrooms redone. Can't fit yet.
Sorry, the place is a mess. We'd be so embarrassed for you to stay. Sorry, can't do it. But also, chaps, like you wrote here in the sheet, can you imagine being the president? And this is the only chance he'll probably have to stay in Buckingham Palace. And then they're just like, yeah, nope.
Yeah, that's what the entire topic is about, Con. So that's
my point being, like, you're going somewhere planning something, and then like the main thing that you go to see.
Yeah, like I'm upset because I go to Hawaii on Monday. Fly to Hawaii with my pals, and by pals I mean family. We're going on Monday, and I found out like 2 weeks ago that the water slides at our resort are under construction.
I'd be pissed. I'd be so pissed.
And they said, feel free to go to our normal pool, the other pool. I don't want to go to the normal pool. I can do that here. I want to go to the vicious water slides. And even worse than that, found out that USS Arizona is under construction.
Is it really?
Yeah. How fucking shitty is that?
That's what I'm talking about. That's terrible. Like, you're going to go all this way because obviously Hawaii is not a trip that one takes frequently because of the distance and price. So the fact that you're going and the one time you're going that these two major things, water slides and the USS Arizona, are not available is really disheartening.
I have two more things on this whole British topic. One, I will never call England Britain ever in my life. I will refer to people as British people. I will refer to the accent as a British accent. I will never refer to a place as Britain. That is stupid. I think you just got to say England. It's not fucking Britain. What?
I call it GB. Going down GB, Great Britain.
Secondly, I think that they can make it up to him by bringing the fellow who was an absolute unit, who stays at the hotel, that works Hagrid. The hotel. What's his? No. You the guy who actually went viral for being the absolute unit.
I thought it was a sheep from.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Let's just move on.
Well, you know, can I say one more thing? A little bit of tea? Earlier in the week, too, it came out a recording of him saying that Meghan Markle was nasty. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Ooh.
He went on Twitter to deny it, but...
I actually want to defend President Trump on this because I don't think that's what he was saying. I don't think... He did say, I didn't know Meghan Markle was nasty. That's a direct quote. Like, he said it. I don't think that's what he meant. I think he misspoke. He was saying, I didn't know she was being nasty to me. Because that's what he describes as people who are being rude, as being nasty. I think that he just left off to me because she said, if he wins, I'll move to Canada or whatever. And then she said, I didn't know she was nasty. I think he meant being nasty to me. He didn't know that she didn't like him.
Or it could be a compliment. You hear about Kate? She's nasty.
She'll lick your butt. Shout out Prince Harry's getting his butt licked.
Anyway, round number three.
The royal anus is clean, Your Highness.
She's a new mom. They don't do that.
Moms like butts.
Only old crusty ones. Mm. No, moms, not butts.
Oh my gosh.
Holy shit. Let's please.
Can we please move on? Round three comes to us from our friends up the Boston Globe. It starts, the couple, crammed in a tiny Riviera apartment with two kids and a third on the way, had spent months searching for a house they could afford. It wasn't easy in Massachusetts' pricey market, but the man, a disabled Army veteran, had one advantage, a military benefit, a loan guarantee that would provide a low-rate mortgage with no money down. Finally, in November, they found a yellow split-level ranch in Draycott they loved. It had a giant living room, two-car garage, nice yard for the kids. The veteran filled his Army paperwork, but in January, as the deal was set to close, he learned that the Veterans Administration had denied his loan application. The reason? His job, assistant manager of a licensed cannabis store.
And I think that's important. It's a licensed store because in Massachusetts, you can have legal cannabis. It wasn't like he was riding around on the streets like fucking T.I., right. like the rubber band man.
I was actually accomplishing a lifelong goal of mine, and then to have it pulled right out from under you at the 11th hour, I was blown away. It was very frustrating and demoralizing, and I mean rightfully so. The man's experience highlights one of the many ways that federal cannabis prohibition harms veterans who either consume or work in the marijuana industry. Veterans who find medical relief from pot say they've suffered loss of benefits, which the VA denies, or have been labeled unemployable. Many more say they're financially overburdened and medically undeserved because the VA doesn't discuss or cover the drug as it does with every other medicine, including opioids. Now, let me tell you, there was one statement in this article that really blew me away. The Army's official comment was, "A military officer working in the cannabis industry runs contrary to Army values." That is the biggest crock ever, because for those who don't know, there's a fun little acronym we use to remember the seven Army values called leadership, LDRSHIP, loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. From the official Army website, the first line of integrity is do what's right, legally and morally. Legally, he's working in a legal industry in his state. I would go so far as to say he's displaying personal courage by going against the grain and making a living in an industry that is not yet completely accepted. But to have this loan taken out from under him, it's really, really disappointing to hear that the Army and the VA are taking.
I would take it a step further than that. I feel like the Army, the VA should not be involved in whatever
right.
your profession is. Who gives a shit? He earned the VA. If he has a job that he's not currently getting arrested for, fine. And whenever you're going to get a VA loan, if you've never done it before, you do have to have proof of insurance, or proof of
income,
employment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they have to look at it and make sure that you have the income before they'll give you this essentially subsidized loan. He has the job. It's a legal job. He's not getting arrested for it. I would understand if they were like, this dude's out here selling fucking heroin, or he's getting his money by doing opiates and shit like that. Fine. But to say that his legal job is not good enough is flat out bullshit. They need to get rid of that, man. Get the income. If you're getting it legally, who gives a shit where it comes from?
You know what's crazy too? When we were in DC the other week, every politician we talked to was like, yeah, we know it's behind the times. It's total bullshit. Like, everybody knows it's wrong and it's hurting veterans, but no, like, it's still
no one wants to be the one to stand up and rock the boat. Hopefully somebody eventually will be that one person to lead the charge. But this is absolutely ridiculous, and Chaps, you're 100% correct. It doesn't matter what the job is. He's not breaking any laws, and he's not saying, hey, I just want to pay in cash, and I don't want you to know where the money's coming from.
In the words of John Malkovich in the movie Rounders, whenever he's talking to Matt Damon, yeah. Give the man his money. Let's
take that man his money.
Round four is the interview. Take it away. Here's our interview.
All right. The whole gang is here. We got Cons, Chaps, Radio Bren, and we have two guys from Soldiers for Wildlife, John Garcia and Mickey Carroll. And John Garcia, you have sort of an interesting start with the Navy, mm-hmm. went through BUDS, rolled out, but you decided to continue a mission from there mm-hmm. in Africa. Can you explain the background of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was saying in the chats before, all it took was a simple vacation to Africa with a family about 8 years ago. And, you know, you go to Africa and you admire the beauty and you see all the wildlife, and it's like something from like a foreign world. You know, it's just like something you always saw in like a Nat Geo, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
And, how's the French on this? Can I?
You can say whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hold on. We'll pause back and redo the question. Like, for these mics, you have to be pretty.
You have to be pretty close.
Yeah, you have it has to be pretty
almost
close
like
too.
A okay. penis. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay.
There you go.
All right. So yeah, it was a family trip about 8 years ago to Africa, and you know, most of the time you leave there after a safari experience, and you don't really grasp what's going on. Yeah, it's kind of a hidden world. And but we were actually educated on what was going on, and it wasn't only the animals that were being decimated from a $20 billion black market trade that was wiping out elephants, rhinos, penguins, but rangers are being killed defending these animals. And you see a little bit of it here and there, you know, the hidden clips behind the scenes that are these animals with their faces cut away while they're still breathing and alive by the thousands. Right now it's up to about 96 elephants a day. Rhino horn is worth more than gold. It can go about.
Wait, they're killing 96 elephants a day?
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I don't feel like there's enough elephants to go around to be killing 96 a day.
No. And it's in a brutal, brutal manner.
Right.
They'll leave them just to avoid as many gunshots as possible to be heard. They'll avoid as many shots. So if the animal just goes down, they'll just cut the face off while it's alive and leave it there, just bleeding out to death.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
And I know folks who have gone to Africa and gone on safaris and they haven't gotten this information. So how is it that you found out about this stuff?
I dug more into it when I understood what was going on. We had a ranger out there that we got to speak to that was kind of telling us what was going on behind the scenes. And I kind of started digging into it there. Mm-hmm. And it took me away when I saw some footage and I started doing research when I was out there. Like, holy shit, this is really what's going on. And you know, when you get out in Africa and you spend a lot of time out there, you see a lot of the third world, obviously, and you see, you know, you fall in love with other charities that are doing great work too, but it just seemed to me that, you know, there's a lot of, there's 7.5 billion people on the planet and these animals are dying by the thousands every day. They don't have much of a chance left. Mm-hmm. Like, someone's got to do something. And then the further I went into it, it was like, there's not that many people doing this shit. And everybody that's doing it or doing the good work, they know each other, mm-hmm. you know? So it's super small and not enough of the world knows about it. So that's kind of how I found out about it. And then as the years went on, after I was there 8 years ago, the price has only gone up for these animals. You know, the commodities, the rhino horn, the pangolin scales, the elephant tusk. So I was saying before, it goes for about $500,000 right now on the black market for a rhino horn in Asia, primarily Vietnam.
Jeez.
But China.
What do they do with those?
It's keratin, so it's the same shit in your fingernails, but they can use it for just to show your status. You can put it in the middle of a business meeting. Mm. You could use it, you know, carve it up and put it into like, and they believe it's, you know, used for like medicinal value and stuff like that. It can cure cancer. It's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all bullshit, but it's so deeply rooted in their culture and it's worth so much money that it's almost impossible to remove if you're going to go after, you know, governments and laws and shit. It's just going to take too much time.
Now, I imagine there's somebody driving right now outside of like Virginia and they're pounding on their steering wheel. Chaps, how the fuck does this have to do with the military? It's a military podcast, not an animal podcast. Explain a little bit of your military background too.
So I was in the Navy, got a contract to Buds, absolutely loved it. If I wasn't doing what I'm doing now, I would be back there tomorrow. And that's been a huge thing because that's like what I wanted to do, you know, for a long time now. And I wanted that challenge and you know, I wanted to be a SEAL and all that. But when I learned about this, it was a constant, you know, tug at me when I was in there, like, Jesus Christ, this time's going by and I'm paying attention to what's going on. And so I stayed in. I loved Buds. It's an ass kicking. It was great. Got a lot of guys in the teams out in Virginia, out in California. And like I said, tomorrow I'd be back if it weren't for this. But I just, you know, this was pulling me so much harder because it was such a desperate need. So over there, it's like, these are like paramilitary operations that are going
on. Yeah, we've seen the pictures that you guys sent. That was what was interesting to me. It's not just, you got, it's the Rangers too have long guns and shit like that. Can you describe some of their training and what they do? Because I'm sure there's some military members listening, like, I just got out of the Marine Corps, just got out of the Army.
Yeah, this would be a good
idea.
I'll
go fucking protect some elephants.
Right.
Yeah. It's, a lot of the problems out there right now at the Rangers are just lack of training and lack of proper equipment and lack of incentive. And there's a lot of corruption behind all that. So what we do is, you know, we're trying to put these guys through proper training to be out there. And it's not only with weapons and stuff like that and running and gunning. A lot of it's just about learning your environment and bushcraft. So it's a lot of, you know, so we want to eventually bring volunteers over from, you know, the armed service here to come over and just, you know, help them train in ways that they know how from here. Because out there, it's a different animal. You need other training when you get out there to learn the environment, like I was saying.
Nope.
I'm sure that, I'm sorry, there's so many people probably walking the streets in New York City right now who would care about this and maybe do something if they thought that they could.
Mm-hmm.
What was the start for you to go from, okay, I care about this and it had an impact, to actually creating this organization and having a positive impact?
I had to get on the ground out there, first and foremost. I didn't want to be the guy. I knew what I was diving into, and I knew it was going to be dangerous, and there was a lot of shit going on out there, and I didn't know Africa too well besides a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I didn't want to be the guy that raised a bunch of money, went out there, and thought I was going to solve all Africa's conservation problems. You know, it's all bullshit. And a lot of people do that, and that's how money gets funded in the wrong hands, and nothing makes a fucking difference. So I had to get out there, and I had to find guys that have been doing this for years, and good teams that weren't, they were private teams. You know, they weren't, you know, funneled in by the government. There was no corruption involved. So I had to travel a bit before I got into this. And then I came in contact with the guy I was telling you about before, Daryl Watt, out of Zambia. He fought for Rhodesia. Probably one of the most legendary bush warfare soldiers ever in the history of the bush wars. It took place in the 70s.
And this dude looks like a snack.
Yeah,
like, he does.
This dude's a sexy dude.
This dude, he's
a sexy dude. I bet he has an accent that'll just make your my panties
make your knees weak.
Goodness gracious.
I'll let you two cover that one.
The stories that this fucking guy has are just unbelievable. Obviously, you guys know Rhodesia fell. But he.
But for those who don't, can you talk a bit, a little, just briefly about it?
Yeah, yeah. Communism affected Southern Africa back in the 70s, and he fought for Rhodesia when it was falling. The government was corrupt. He actually wound up going to South Africa and fighting for their special forces once Rhodesia was going downhill. But he left. Yeah, he left them due to corruption even higher up in his military. But he served as a captain. And there's quotes in books about him. He didn't write any books about himself that say he was literally one of the most legendary soldiers people have ever seen. Mm-hmm. This guy would, I mean, we track animals out there. We track poachers and stuff like that. And this dude would know where you were going before looking at fucking footsteps.
Mm-hmm. See, yeah. These are the type of dudes that piss me off. Like, yeah. I knew a couple when I was in the Marine Corps, too, where like they just had tracking. Because I did tracking dogs, but without a dog's nose, I don't know where fucking somebody's going.
Yeah.
And some of the guys that like taught in the school that I was at be like, oh, look at the way that the grass goes. Like,
yeah.
Like, you son of a bitch.
I know. Yeah. Right.
How do you even learn that stuff?
It takes so much fucking time, man. If you're just a normal person and never done it before, you'll look at two footprints, one that's an hour old and one that's 10-hour old. And a guy that knows how to do it, be like, all right, this is more fresh. We're going to get to him about an hour. The other one to me, to any ordinary guy, is like, that's the same fucking footprint. What the fuck are you guys talking about?
But right? Also, you can't give them too much credit because I've seen enough shows on Alaska to know that those guys are weird. Like, if you're a tracker, you are a weird fuck. Like, yeah. I've seen so many guys that be like, this is fresh bear scat, and they'll just pick it up and be like, yeah, it's totally fresh. Like, the steam is coming off. That's how you know. It's fresh, pal. But with the elephants, have you guys ever thought about strapping like a machine gun to the top of an elephant?
Yeah. And training the elephant to defend itself.
That's pretty intimidating. If you're firing off an M2 from a fucking elephant, that's pretty.
If you could give baboons K-bars create a little animal military force, if you could start training the animals to do it. But basically, Soldiers for Wildlife, if you had to sum it up, is there like three parts of the mission, because I know it's almost like a police mentoring team where you're mentoring new people coming in to protect the animals, and you're also raising funds to raise awareness for it. What else would you say? Like, what's the main goal?
There's three aspects to this. The first one is any poaching initiatives.
There's three schools of thought.
We got all of them.
Okay.
The first one's any poaching initiatives, making sure that they're, you know, our guys are well-trained, they got all the right gear. They're getting paid well, so their incentives there. They go out, catch a guy, we give them a bonus, you know, shit like that. So there's that. So we've got 2X special operators out there, you know, training these guys up in a paramount, you know, opportunity. Mm-hmm. Then we've got the educational aspect of this whole thing, where we're doing this not only in the U.S. and trying to speak out here, you know, we're doing it in Africa, we're doing it with local communities, which is super important, because if you don't educate people on what the hell's going on, you're going to lose. You know, so that's big. So we bring in foreigners from overseas. We've got a school called the Dung Beetle Bush School. So the Shit Beetle Bush School, which brings people out and they can go through courses like ecology courses, ethology, anti-poaching, all this kind of stuff. And we're on private land, so you can go out on foot, not just in like a safari vehicle, and walk right up to these animals. And we're going to teach you thresholds. We teach about their behavior and everything like that. So right there, and we teach them about everything that's going on. So right there, they get a real education about not only the wildlife, but what's going on. And then now we're going to start uplifting communities. We've already started in Zambia. Daryl is very close with the local chief, who basically controls the whole whole area out there. He's a local headman, so he's one of his most trusted advisors. He employs a lot of the guys. All his anti-poaching guys come out of this guy's community. So we have not only that piece of land in that area in Zambia as well, but we're now going to have rights to the whole vast area for just anti-poaching rights. We own one of the properties.
What sort of involvement do the local governments have? Because I can't imagine, you know, just some guy coming from America and says, hey, I want to help.
Yeah.
That can't be just easy.
No. We can do this because of Daryl. Daryl's our whole link into this now. So he's been there for 17, 18 years. So he got a piece of property a while ago and is now living on it. And he's got all these rights because of this chief and how close they are. Mm-hmm. So that just grants us rights to do whatever we want. Now he's a part of the organization out there. We've established it in Zambia and South Africa. So Daryl's now part of Soldiers for Wildlife, and we could, you know, essentially do whatever we want with this chief. As long as he grants, you know, the okay, we have access to everything. So we will have the anti-poaching rights over there as well.
Are you so anti-poaching that you won't even eat Eggs Benedict?
No. That's what people think. They think I'm some crazy guy that's out talking about this show.
Dad. He's been sitting on that plane to like an hour before you guys.
I thought of that on the plane today, I was so happy with myself. I just chuckled. Yeah. That was a good one.
The sweet release.
So what are you looking from Americans or people listening to the show, like what are you looking for? What would help?
We need people to be educated. We're looking for more property out there. So what makes us what's going on? One of the bigger problems out there is corruption. Like I was saying before, national parks are almost impossible to defend. You know what I mean? There's so much corruption in the back of that, run by governments. It's impossible to defend. So what we're doing is we're buying more land under our control, and we're keeping it under, we're privatizing and keeping it under our control. We're breeding these animals in a natural environment. We're not just, you know, hosting only rhino. We've got an abundance of species out there, and we're trying to expand our land to save the species. So we've got a place in South Africa now. We've got a place in Zambia. So we need help. We need to get this out there really bad.
Africa is a big continent, though. How do you?
Good point, Constance.
I mean, as you guys know, it is a very big continent.
Yeah.
How do you know where to set up shop? Where to go to buy land?
That's tricky too. Zambia is pretty safe for the most part.
Realestate.com.
But
yeah, right.
Yeah, you got to do because I've got these partners out there. It's made it easier.
Natural, okay.
But it's we're actually. It's a good thing no one in Africa is listening to this, I hope. But we're next to the police.
Sorry, we are the world's leading military podcast. They probably are.
Oh, whatever. But we're next to a police academy right now in South Africa, so we're pretty safe. There hasn't been a rhino poaching incident there in over 8 years. So we're in an extremely protected area. It's all fenced in. There's bigger plans for the property we probably can't tell you about over this recording.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to show you later. But yeah, it's picking your piece of land and where you are is definitely a factor there.
Can you talk through just real, because this is fascinating. Can you talk through the process by which these poachers go to find these animals, track them, and then hunt them? And then on the other side, how you guys will then interdict into that process?
And can you shoot those people when they come onto your property?
It depends where you are. In South Africa right now is so corrupt, it's very, very tricky. In Zambia, you can.
It's tricky.
Holy shit. We provide our own little investigation after, and we set up shop before the guys even get there, the police get there. So, you know, we know what's going on. Then we could basically be like, this is exactly what happened. And they have no room to fuck it up. You know what I mean? It depends on the poachers. If it's a local meat poacher that's just looking, you know, for meat and we catch him, you know, he could just be looking for food for his family or the fucking village. So we don't want to arrest that guy and have that guy go away. You know, it sucks. It is what it is. But if a guy's coming in, a lot of times now, what I was talking about before, these are very intricate crime syndicates. These are gangs. These are armed militias that are coming in and do this. So in that case, you want to take them out. But you also need to get a hold of those guys. You set up ambushes. So we've got a really good informer program where we have guys out in the villages looking for intel. And every time they get somebody and we make an arrest, we give them a bonus, so they're super incentivized by it. So you know, we usually set up ambushes. If they're there at that time they say they're going to be and they're going after this animal and we catch them in the act, this guy gets a bonus, and that's how we go about it. So we'll catch them, we'll apprehend them, and then we'll investigate, because we want to get that guy that's exporting this shit out of the fucking country so we can cut the head off the snake. You know what I mean? He can hire as many fucking foot soldiers as he wants. Right. You know, he's just going to come back.
And I'm sure that's kind of like drug trade in a lot of countries too, where it's really profitable for the people that are in the local villages. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to switch the mindset of, like, if I go get a rhino horn, I'm going to get paid this much money, like, and then...
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm not doing that because it's bad. Like, yeah. That's a hard process for people to grasp.
It is, because, you know, they're money hungry. You know, it's,
well, who isn't? Yeah. I mean, if you told me, like, hey, chaps, that wild boar that walked into your backyard the other day, you kill that bitch, I'll give you $50,000.
Let's go. Fire up the rifle. Yeah.
But I don't know that that's the last wild boar in Texas.
Yeah. Right. When these guys do this shit, too, they're not promised money either. So we've actually, Daryl's done this a number of times where he'll catch a poacher, and if the guy's good and he's been after him for a while, Daryl will be like, listen, I'll offer you a fucking salary and help your family if I fucking turn you around to be an any poacher, because he's obviously good at tracking. You know what I mean? He needs fucking money, so Daryl will, you know, he's got the whole fucking thing.
That's like what we do with hackers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They hire him for the government? Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Catch me if you can.
Yeah. I'm just going
to
say.
Flip it around. Yeah.
How hard is it to find elephants? I feel like they don't move very fast. They're pretty big. Is it really that hard?
No, it's not hard. And when you're doing patrols and fucking tall bush, man, they'll kill you. You're not getting away from it.
So go back on a point you were talking about before. You were talking about how you teach people how to approach animals and the threshold and how close they can get.
Yeah, the elephant, we don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We run. When the elephant's coming after you, you're gone. Yeah, you're gone. The only way you're going to get away from an elephant is if you find a really thick tree you can climb up, which is probably not going to happen, or find a cliff or a steep slope.
Okay.
Otherwise, that thing is mowing you down, man.
Or if you have a feather. Well, under the trunk action.
Or if you have a...
Stop them.
Wait.
Have you tried the bucket full of mice technique?
No, yeah. I haven't. Let's hear it.
Oh, you guys could probably use us if you need any advice about... Yeah.
What are some animals that you do teach the threshold for, though?
Rhinos, buffalo, hippo, which is... Those are interesting because they're super aggressive. But we do that. We do that with anybody that comes. Well, you know, we'll show them how to do it, and they give you your signs. Like the buffalo, for instance, if you get too close to a buffalo, the females in the cast will run to the back, and the males, the big bulls, will all come to the front, and they basically, you know, they're like testing you, like, all right, what's going to happen next? And then they'll start inching forward. So you got to be able to find that medium where you're like, all right, now it's time to fuck off.
So
you
know, the male buffaloes are kind of like the Unsullied.
Yeah,
yeah, there you go. They're just like, here we go.
Oh,
bitch.
Man, Game of Thrones.
I've actually started my own program to teach female buffaloes to stand up for themselves.
Wow.
And I've been going over there, and I'm like, ladies, it's time.
It's 2019.
Yeah. It's 2019. Lady
Let's
buffaloes.
Let's get some female buffaloes
stay up front.
On the front lines.
Yes.
Great point, Kate.
Thank you.
So other than awareness, though, obviously we can share a link and make people so aware that they couldn't be more aware. How else can people help?
We need this. How else can people help? Is come out there and get educated on it. Visit us. We want when I started this, I wanted it to be. I didn't want it to be like the fucking WWE. You know what I mean? I didn't want this to be fucking corporate. I want to keep this as genuine as fucking possible. I want people to come out and see what the hell is going on. I want to acquire land and show people that I'm buying this land, and these rhino, their populations are fucking increasing while everybody else is going downhill. I want people to see this. The whole thing is about being genuine here, and I really want it to happen. I mean, I gave up. After the military, I moved home. I live with my mom. I've been working odd jobs. I'm hanging wallpaper in the Barstool office. I was a garbage man, did FedEx, all to just because I'm volunteering half my fucking year to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is, I'm a normal dude. You know, I pass a charity that I care about, I'm going to give money to it. You know, I've got that. You know, I want to help. But this to me right now is there's no one that needs more fucking help than this right now. Like, they're going to be dead in 10, 15 years.
So, in regards to the question, I think the biggest way to help is, you know, we're raising funds for the privatization of the land and the private conservations, and that's going to allow us to patrol, expand our services, allow more animals and wildlife to be on those properties, and go from there.
And a lot of this money too that we get from foreigners when they come in and get educated on this and they go through these cool courses, a lot of that money is going towards sponsoring rangers that don't have the funds to be a ranger. So you're going to be employing them at the same time, so it's going to be a sponsorship opportunity. So we're you know, we're uplifting communities as well.
And where can they find all the information at?
On the website, soldiersforwildlife.org.
Easy
enough. Say that one more time.
That was a nice plug.
Soldiersforwildlife.org.
Soldiersforwildlife.org?
Mm-hmm.
There, we got it in there like four or five times.
All right, fellas, before we let you go, favorite elephant-related movie that's not Dumbo?
Oh, Jesus. What, do you know any?
No.
I'm
Does Operation Dumbo Drop count?
That counts, yeah.
That counts. I was going to say.
The worst movie of all time.
I really like the elephants in Aladdin that are part of the procession when it becomes
there
a
you
prince.
Go.
That's a good one. In my opinion, that's not good for people who are poachers. You shouldn't know that because they actually appropriated elephant culture and that. Did. By making them march. We don't want them to do that. We want them to be free-range elephants.
That's right. That's true.
Wow.
That's
right. Wow. Yeah. Wow, I'm
rookie,
getting educated right
choice.
Now.
Rookie choice. Yeah.
I appreciate
no.
that.
Well, John and Mickey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
it's
for
really
having us.
Thank you so much.
And a different.
Yeah, make sure when you're listening to this to check out the blog. I'll post a video of like what they do so you can see some of the pictures and stuff as well because they're insane. Especially the one dude with the ribs or the abs.
With Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl. Shout out Daryl.
Daryl's gonna make you wet.
That's a good spot to end.
All right, let's end it here.
This episode is also brought to you by our friends at Shady Rays. If you need some top quality sunglasses, you better be getting them from Shady Rays. My entire squad, they have kids, they have women's, they have men's, all of that. If you want to get some, like, we're going to be rocking them all the time whenever we're in Hawaii, because folks, I have a feeling we're going to lose some. I'm just being honest. We lose things all the time in this family. And we already have the free replacement. If we do lose them, they're going to replace them if they're lost, broken, for any reason, whatever. If you drop them into a volcano when you're in Hawaii, if you smash them on the water slides, if you lose them in the ocean, does not matter. They're going to replace it for free. That's right, free. Make sure you're getting your Shady Rays because not only are they great quality sunglasses, but they're doing good things for good people. They provide 10 meals to fight hunger with every single order placed, and they've placed over 4 million meals to date. Use the promo code ZBT for 50% off. Two or more pairs. Buy one, get one free. You can get two pairs for just $45 and you've helped some people out and you look good while you do it. Stunt all over the place. Stunt in Hawaii. Stunt in Massachusetts. Stunt in Virginia. Stunt wherever the fuck you are. Stunt with Shady Raids. That's the way that we're doing it all summer long. Shady Raids, promo code ZBT. Make sure you check out what those fellas are doing across the globe. If you're interested, go to their website, go to their Twitter, go to their Instagram. Find out how you can get involved if that's a project that you're passionate about. Let's move on. Round number five. So I've been spending a little bit more time going to Lackland for medical care. I've been on there like taking my kids and things like that. And one thing I love to see, and I'm not joking about this. I'm not being facetious. I'm not being sarcastic. I absolutely love seeing old vets wearing proudly their campaign covers, like not campaign covers like you a dress uniform, but like what campaign they were part of, whether it's Vietnam, where it's Korea. If you're lucky enough still to see somebody who served in World War II, I love it because you can go up there and shake their hands and say, thank you for what you did here specifically, especially with the Vietnam vets because they didn't get that.
I noticed we were in Charlotte, Chaps. You saw a veteran wearing a Vietnam vet's hat and you walked right up to him and thanked him for his service.
I do. I try to do that every time I see it. I think it's very important. I talk about like respecting people for what they did. They're wearing that hat essentially to say like this, I'm very proud of my service. And I think that is commendable. And it's something that's worth going to shake that veteran's hand for. I always do it. I think that's incredibly important. That being said, our generation, I feel like, is the first generation who's kind of like, I don't know, but do it. You do it, Kate. You're like, I think that sound is the Kate special.
But you know what I think with those hats? I think that we are in such a internet, social media heavy age. It's easy to find and keep in contact with the people that you served with. Part of me feels like those hats for the older generation are like a little beacon of maybe I'm going to run into somebody who's going to know this hat and served in the same thing. Like they don't have that same connection as we did.
So you think that's like their version of putting OEF, OIF in their Twitter bio?
In their bio. That's their version of putting in their bio where they were and what they did. But I promise you there's vets out there who are walking around and they've run into either old friends or people who were related to that unit. And I feel like that's probably also part of it too. I don't know, but I love it. I'm not going to wear one, love seeing it though.
I think that's why I wanted to bring it up because there is this pervasive thought that I'm not going to do that. Like we put it up on the Zero Block 30 Instagram just a couple hours ago and it already has nearly 2,700 votes. When I said I will wear a veteran hat, the options were never, 40 and under, 41 to 55, and 55 and up. So the other respondents who were polled, they said 55 and up was 39%. 46% was never, and then 41 to 55 was 8%, and 40 and under was 7%. I feel like I will do it. For me, it's 20 years removed from the service. So let's say I got out and I was 34 years old, 54 years old is where I will go. If I got out and I was 22, maybe I would do it at 42. 20 years removed from service is where I'll throw on the old Iraqi campaign fucking hat.
That's a solid rule. I feel like 20 years, solid rule. Because by then, you're probably not on social media as much and like that. Put your little beacon on. I like it.
And I think it's weirder to do it whenever somebody your age is still in. If you do it 20 years removed, the odds are somebody that you're still in, unless they're like a sergeant major or a colonel or above, they're going to be out. So they're going to know that you're retired. I think that's a big distinction too. Because if you're walking around and you're 31 with your – I mean, if you want to, brother, sister, go after it and do whatever hat you want to wear.
We don't have shame.
You know what? Fuck it. I might do it. I might order one today.
When I'm going to start wearing mine?
When?
And I think a lot of veterans are on the same page. First gray pube.
Oh.
Well, yeah. Chat, ooh,
I'm in. Okay.
So when you see me wearing it, which will probably be around next week or so, I don't know. I just had a birthday.
I could buy 15 hats at least right now.
I hadn't really given much thought to this topic and if I was going to start wearing one of these hats at some point in my life or not. But the way I would equate it, just like you'd wear the hat of your favorite team that you're supporting, whether, you know, like if you're a Yankees fan, you see people all around New York City wearing Yankees hats. It's just like, in my opinion, you're wearing the hat of your team, right? You're saying, hey, I was there. I was on the team. I was competing. I was in combat or, you know, I was supporting.
I don't see you ever wearing these hats, Cons. I don't feel like they're fashionable enough for you. Unless Vineyard Vine starts making Operation Iraqi Freedom hats, I think Cons is out.
No, yeah. I could see him on the golf course with a cigar and like his little, like it'll be a cool version of it. But
I disagree. I think Cons might, you know what, guys, this might be our move. We do a combination ZBT foreplay pod where we do camp, like Operation Iraqi Freedom, the same type of patch, but put it on a quarter zip.
Yeah, I like that
real,
a lot.
Real tasty.
I'd wear that.
I'd wear that shit too. That'd be fucking sexy.
For me, like these hats, it's just not my style. It's like very overt, very flashy. Like, hey, this is what it is. And I think it's fine for some people. It's just not my personal style. But I have no problem, and I am very proud of having served in Iraq. So I would have no problem wearing something that lets other people know that I did that.
I think because you're at Jersey.
You never wear West Point stuff either. So you keep that kind of – you keep it under wraps.
I always wear things that are very subtle, very, very small, very subtle.
Yeah. I think because you're a Jersey guy and you're a Jersey Shore guy, we should get you a velour sweatsuit that has where you served on the butt. Oh, a little juicy, because you're also dragging a wagon, Cons. Like,
yeah.
It's no secret. Yeah. We need to get you like a juicy velour and put where you served right on the cheeks.
I think W on one butt cheek. P on the other butt cheek.
West Point?
Yeah.
And then yeah,
these are all great ideas.
On either side.
Those are good ideas. All right, let's move on to Save Ron's Alibis. What we got?
Eight, anything?
Cons, I'm letting you roll. I know you always got one, buddy.
Well, no, this is something that came into the news. There's some online petition going around to rename the Fort Hood arrival and departure airfield where everyone – deploying from Fort Hood leaps from and comes back from. There was a woman there. She was called the Hug Lady. And I remember this woman. Her name was Elizabeth Corin Laird. And for 12 years, she was always there for every unit that was leaving and coming back. And she was a sweet little lady. And she'd give everybody a hug, every last person. And she would talk to some people, engage them in conversations. And then when you were coming back, just the smiling face to be the first one to welcome you. So they're trying to rename the airport after her. So I think that was very cool. And then one thing that was in the article that struck me from her funeral, the former 3 Corps and Fort Hood Command Sergeant Major, Major William Joe Ganey, he said he was certain that Laird had taken her mission to another venue in heaven when she passed away in 2015. And he was quoted as saying, "Miss Elizabeth is there now, hugging my scouts." And that kind of hit me right in the feels.
So right in the feels.
Yeah. I can't see any reason why this won't happen. So just great.
Yeah, that is cool. I saw that circulating the rounds. And it reminded me of, so I went through Bangor, Maine, and there was a group of little old people there that that would wait and they would hug everybody on the way out. And I remember
that's a job I could see you doing, Kate.
Oh my God. I would bring
Kate, you are best. You are gonna be the next hug lady.
Oh my, so on my one deployment on the way home, we had a 5-hour wait till we could fly again. And they let us, you could leave and go out into this. There's this gated parking lot. And this little old lady was like, "Do you want to stretch your legs and go for a walk around the lot with me and chat it up?" And so it was like the middle of the night. And this little old lady was walking around the parking lot with me, just asking how I'm doing. And she had a little PB&J sandwich in a plastic bag. I was like, fuck yeah. It was just like, I'll never forget it.
It might have been you from the future if she smoked.
She was ripping Marlboros with me. I was like, whoa, this lady. Yeah. So I think that's very cool. And I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure that'll happen.
Okay. You got anything?
No, I'm just.
LIVIN.
Any reflections on this day of your birth?
Going into year 33, man.
Shout out Jesus, shit. By the way.
I said my real age.
Oh no.
40, going into year 45? Man, rickety bones. Nope. I just am loving life and happy for another year of Zero Blog 30. And yeah. That's it.
Sound the retreat. Wow.